Let's take our Bibles and turn, if you will, to the book of Exodus. Exodus chapter 17. I want to think with you in the book of Exodus, starting in the book of Exodus, first of all, about three sinister personalities. And then I want to think about satanic power that's going to be available to them and their descendants. And finally, the sovereign plan of God and how that all fits in together with what we're going to be studying. In the 17th chapter of the book of Exodus, we're going to be seeing this first personality, a sinister personality that we want to spend just a little bit of time thinking about. But let me set the scene for you. Let me give you the background from the 37th chapter of the book of Genesis. From Genesis chapter 37, where we see chapter 36, of course, Esau goes into the lower third of modern-day Jordan, which becomes Edom, Mount Seir area. And then Jacob, it says in chapter 37, verse 1 of Genesis, he stays in Cana, which we know as the modern-day state of Israel. He stays there with his 11 sons who were born outside of Israel and his one son Benjamin who was born inside of Israel, and they are going to establish then the Jewish people. Oh, their Jewish people were already established basically. They were a family. In fact, Jacob, when he leaves to go into the Egyptian bondage, the first time that the Jews depart, a dispersion, diaspora they call it. It's a Greek word, but it's been applied to the Jews being driven out of the promised land. There were three diasporas. The first one is when they're driven out because of famine, basically, but into Egypt. And then they have an aliyah. See that word aliyah? Aliyah is a Hebrew word meaning literally to go up to Jerusalem. It was applied to the pilgrim feast, the three pilgrim feasts of Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles, when every Jewish male was to go to Jerusalem. And those three feasts happening three times a year. Now it's been applied to coming back into the land, or now literally current day immigration back into the land. So the first diaspora is when they went to Egypt, and then Joshua, of course, brings them back on the first aliyah back into the land. And the second diaspora is the Babylonian captivity, when the three waves by Nebuchadnezzar took all the children of Israel into the Babylonian captivity, except for a handful who went with Jeremiah down to Egypt. 70 years later, Ezra and Nehemiah are used and Zerubbabel to bring the Jews back into the land, reinstitute the temple practices, and reconstruct the city walls and the defenses of the city, keeping them from being a laughingstock among the nations of the world. And the third diaspora took place in 70 AD when General Titus and the Roman army destroyed the city, devastated the temple, and dispersed the Jews for the third time to the four corners of the earth. Now just remember, the first diaspora, they went to Egypt. The second diaspora, they went to Babylon. It was the third diaspora when they went to the four corners of the earth, as prophesied in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 28, when Moses said, "If you don't obey me, you Jewish people, speaking for God, I am going to disperse you to the four corners of the earth. I'll make you a proverb among the people of the world. You'll be fearful, you'll be persecuted, you'll be almost destroyed." And we know the history of the last 2,000 years, that basically has come to pass, just like Moses said it would come to pass. The third aliyah is in the process of taking place. The third return of the Jews back to the land is in the process of taking place. Having said that, we're approaching the first diaspora. Chapter 37 starts the history of Jacob. As you continue your study through the book of Genesis, you see all 12 of the sons grow up. They become ultimately the 12 tribes of Israel. When Jacob leaves to go into the Egyptian bondage, to go there to try to save his family from the famine in the land, 70 of them go out in the family. You can count it. It's in the scriptures. You can count as well as I can. And they go into the Egyptian bondage. 430 years later, they're going to come out of the Egyptian bondage. They're going to be led by Moses, wandering for 40 years in the wilderness, ultimately coming across the Jordan River back into the promised land to conquer the promised land by Joshua, third chapter of the book of Joshua, with over 2,600,000 men, plus the women and the children who are going to go into the area of the promised land, giving them that privilege by God himself through his family. So you go through the book of Genesis. Then when they're in the Exodus, God raises up a man in the book of Exodus named Moses. unique, the story, how he's left in the bulrushes and found by the Egyptian leader's wife. And so how that story develops is just very beautiful in the first part of Exodus. Then we see Moses grow up. He spends 40 years here, 40 years there, and then he's going to spend 40 years in the wilderness. 40 years getting prepared to do what God wants him to do, bring the people back or towards the promised land. Never does have the privilege of bringing him into the promised land because he usurped the victory or the glory from God himself just in the last moments before he was to enter the promised land. He usurped that victory from God, and God said, you cannot go in. I'll let you see, but you cannot go in. Come to Israel with us. It'll all come together. You stand on Mount Nebo, and you can realize that Moses had unbelievable vision that day as he saw all the way to Jerusalem, all the way to the north, all the way to the south, all that God had promised to give the Jewish people, but he was not able to go in there. But God then raises up Moses, and Moses is going to bring them out. Moses' confrontation with the Pharaoh, you know that story. And then the Passover, the very famous first of the seven Jewish feasts that God gives to the Jewish people. And the very first observance of it takes place the night that they're going to leave the bondage and head towards the freedom that God had promised to them. They killed a lamb that was without blemish, which they had watched for 10 days. They took his blood, took the hyssop, which is a sponge-like plant, and painted it on the doorpost so that when the death angel came, he would pass over and not take anyone from the firstborn, at least, from that family. Then, of course, they began eating the unleavened bread meaning separation. They couldn't eat the sourdough bread anymore. They had to eat the unleavened bread for 7 days, and that was showing God giving them the capability of coming out of bondage and going into freedom. That's the purpose for the unleavened bread. God then tells Moses in Exodus chapter 12 that is to be rehearsed every year throughout all of the generations. It's called a Passover Seder. And once a year, on the day of Passover, the family, the Jewish family, will get together. Everybody will sit down. The father at the head of the table, sitting there. You have to have three ingredients in a Passover supper. You have to have the lamb, you have to have the bitter herbs, and you have to have the unleavened bread. There have been some additional things added by the Jewish people over the years, but those three ingredients are needed. A piece of lamb, the unleavened bread, and the bitter herbs. Of course, the lamb representing the blood that was shed for the Passover, the unleavened bread, the separation from the Egyptian bondage into freedom, and the bitter herbs, all that they went through in the 430-year period of time. A little child in the Passover Seder will say, Abba. That in Hebrew means daddy. Daddy, why are we eating this strange meal? And for the next however long it takes, he rehearses the Passover to them. They do it every single year, the Passover Seder. Every year, they said, it's a sacred time. I would say probably 99.44% of all Jewish families in the world go through the Passover Seder every single year. Now, they start out of the Egyptian bondage. They go through the Red Sea. God miraculously takes Moses and the children of Israel through the Red Sea. They start their wanderings. They're ultimately, in that first year, only going to go from the Red Sea over to Mount Sinai. At Mount Sinai, they're going to come to a place where God is then going to give the law. Exodus chapter 20 is the giving of that law, and it is talking about that time when Moses goes up on Mount Sinai, receives from God that information that is needed so they can know how they're supposed to live. Remember, that was one of the gifts God gives exclusively to the Jewish people. In Exodus chapter 17, however, they're going to come under attack. They're just in the area of Mount Sinai, which is just below the southern border of Israel. They're in that area of Mount Sinai, and a people are going to come attacking.